Welcome into This Has to Work. I'm Matt Hoddle, and joining me today is Martha Underwood. Martha serves as the head of retail software engineering at BBVA Compass and is also the excited founder of Executive Estrogen, which is by far and away one of the coolest names of a company ever. And Executive Estrogen is a consulting firm that teaches women how to translate emotion into an efficient tool that leads to their career advancement. Martha, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. I mean, you made me sound so awesome. I really love that.
I really do. You know, it's, I have a consulting firm. I've had other companies, and naming them something good has always been a struggle for me. And so when I learned the name of your company, I got to give you props there. That is outstanding. Outstanding stuff. So want to talk to you today about, so first of all, let me take a step back. So I want to have you talk about corporate innovation or driving innovation within large corporations, because for those of us on the outside that are kind of the startup side or of the small company side, for us, innovation is as easy as walking into a room and saying, hey, you know, guys, we're going to try this, right? It's very different when you're in an organization. And I think, you know, large organization, and I don't know that we fully understand or appreciate that.
Yeah.
And so as way of walking this back, you were and still are to a large extent really responsible for driving a ton of the corporate innovation within BBVA Compass.
Yeah.
So let's start from the top. How would you describe corporate innovation?
Sure. I mean, I'd say corporate innovation is not too much different from what you guys do from a startup perspective, but confined within a large organization, it's trying to experiment with things that work, having the resources and access to R&D and access to SMEs and access to knowledge, but allowing them to experiment and with the goal in mind to create a new product, create a new service, and to generate new revenues. So really, that's what I would think corporate innovation is within a large organization.
So how does a corporation measure, you know, innovation efforts as successful?
So typically you measure things from a dollars perspective or an adoption perspective.
Interesting.
Adoption meaning people are using it, whether it's an internal tool. If we had innovated and created a new tool to make our employees a lot more efficient, then that turns into cost as well. Or if we created a new product or service that changed our customers' behavior, then we've measured it and we've said, yes, this was a good investment for us to invest this time or invest this, you know, R&D or invest these resources to be dedicated to innovation efforts that result in that.
So to give our listeners an idea of what we're talking about when we say corporate innovation, talk to me about a project that you've worked on inside corporate innovation that you're particularly proud of, so we can give everybody a sense of what we're talking about.
Sure. So one of the things, and we might get into this, is I do a lot of digital transformation. So coming into BBVA, I was responsible for mortgage. Mortgage is very boring. Everyone knows you have to walk into an office and say, hey, fill out the paperwork for mortgage. Well, with BBVA, I was responsible for taking that whole process digital. And the thing is, we see that more customers want to be able to have access to anything, applications, whether it's credit card or it's a home loan or it's a HELOC or whatever it is. I may want to come home after work and get online and be able to do that. So I was in charge of taking that whole process, which is very complex, and you have regulatory and compliance constraints, and take that online. And that was pretty exciting because BBVA had never done that. We never offered that. And now I can say I was a part of that, and it's successful because we have a high level of adoption for that.
And that's got to be in direct response to what your, you know, your customers are asking for. They don't want to have to walk into a branch anymore to fill out paperwork. They expect to be able to look at this stuff, you know, drinking coffee on their sofa and their PJs if they want to.
Absolutely.
Right. So, yeah. Okay, great. So I have heard, and I think other people have heard this too, that corporate innovation can be very difficult.
Yeah.
And a lot of those efforts will fail ultimately. But why do you think that is? Like, what is driving the challenge behind a lot of those? Is it that the projects are just super audacious? Is it the structure itself? What is it that makes it so difficult?
So I think it's simple. It's lack of collaboration and then going in with a specific goal in mind. And also trying to put a number to it. Too focused on cost. While cost is important, it shouldn't be a barrier to innovation internally. And so one of the things, actually a couple of months ago, I was surfing through YouTube and I came across a professor at University of Central Florida. I think his name is Kenneth. I can't remember his name. But the name of his speech was Greatness Can't Be Planned. And he was talking about innovation within organizations. And if you have specific objectives, you might not get to create something awesome. But if you go in when saying, you know, I have an overarching goal, and then you use stepping stones to actually get there and formulate an objective, so where you're starting to see through experimentation, hey, our customers would prefer going online, and this is what it looks like, basically from a clicks perspective, and not saying I am going to design this form based on what I think that they would want, then you land on something awesome. And so people get it wrong because you have too many opinions and they want to stick to the objectives because they're trying to measure what the outcome is going to be. I mean, I think that's the mistake a lot of people make, and we need to get back to experimentation and play and using the talent that we have internally to say, guys, you are in the trenches with this stuff all day long. You talk to our clients, you're in the code, you collaborate, you're also users of this technology too. So what are your ideas and what do you think? And having them voice it, I think we will find some amazing things. And that's what they get wrong because I think leadership tries to control it too much.
Yeah, so in the small business world, the startup world, in technology companies, you know, the idea of trying something and it failing is perfectly reasonable.
Yes,
in the scope of their work life. Yep. It's actually expected, right? You're supposed to push boundaries, you're supposed to take chances. But that's not how big companies work, right?
No.
There is a significant amount of cost in those experiments just out of sheer size and payroll and overhead and everything else. So it's a really unique position to be put in to say, hey, we want you to be innovative. We want you to try new things. We want you to fail. Oh, but, you know, it's still a business at the end of the day.
Yep. But if you're intentional about it, and one of the things that I did was I went to strategy and control and said, okay, I need a block of hours, and how do we categorize these hours as innovation time, right? Because you say 80-20, 80% of your time you're recording, but maybe we take 10% of that and maybe make it 70-30. And 10% of the time I can tell my developers, hey guys, try to solve this problem or go tackle this defect that's been out there for, you know, how long, or how do you rethink this process or create something new? And then that's the way we can kind of balance it. And I think more of us need to think like that and be courageous to go to companies and or go to our leadership and say, hey, we can do it within these numbers still and still provide that value.
I know from what I've heard that BBVA specifically is seen as a bank and as an institution that is really focused on innovation and technology and trying, you know, things. I mean, you guys were probably one of the first major banks to have, you know, a dedicated Scrum team that was just working on projects that may never see the light of day. And that was a real investment to be made there. So obviously that's, you know, you're seeing that. And I would guess you're also seeing engagement levels from those employees who are being asked to do things that are interesting or unique or new, are probably engaged and probably, you know, longer term employees, probably happier, probably more productive, all of those things, because it's not just, hey, change the color of this font on some, you know, form on a website for a, to your point, like do a HELOC, right? Like,
correct.
I can only imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that speaks to BVA and why I really enjoy working there, because you do get to see that and experience that. And I know that we just hot off the presses, where BBVA is exploring selling financial products through Amazon. Like, that's unheard of.
That's wild.
That's wild, right? But it's awesome at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that's changing behaviors on where people would even look for financial products. And I think they're intentional about that, and they understand the landscape right now as it relates to innovation, and that we have to stay ahead of the curve because you got all of these fintechs popping up.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask you a question. I get dinged for this from friends of mine. There's this term intrapreneur.
Yes,
right?
Know it well.
And it's usually used for anybody who's not familiar with it to describe someone who acts like an entrepreneur, but from within a larger company or an organization for which maybe they're not a founder or owner, et cetera.
Correct.
And I've always felt this term was a bit of a slight to entrepreneurs because I am an entrepreneur. I've been on both sides of the equation. I know, but it, you know, to me, it's like, you know, entrepreneurs aren't risking their own capital. They aren't necessarily risking their own, you know, careers or their lifestyles or stuff, where entrepreneurs are. And I get a lot of pushback from people who are in positions like yours, who are very much living to that idea of an entrepreneur. So tell me all the ways I'm wrong in my viewpoint there.
Sure. I can see it both ways, because like my dad was a serial entrepreneur, so I get it. And he took the risk. But I'm on both sides. I think it's just a different school of thought and just a matter of preference of where they want to showcase their genius, so to speak. And I think entrepreneurs are great for companies, because they're going to be the ones that's forward thinking, and they have all of the resources and capital and people that the companies can supply them so that they can realize their ideas. And I think that they are needed. And a lot of times companies seek out entrepreneurs because they are looking for something new and they need that talent within their organization. And I do think that entrepreneurs do take a risk with their careers. It's their relationship capital with their leadership, because they could be looked at as the mad scientist, someone who's always looking at creating something and doing something. And if it fails, then there's a lot more accountability, because you got to report back to your shareholders. So I think that it's just a different type of risk, and it's based off a choice. And I think that entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs are, there's not one better than the other, because they both have risk. But I think that in order for corporations to really win the game of innovation, they need to seek out those guys.
One thing I do see with that, and somebody reminded me of this, and I thought it was a very fair point as well, was that intrapreneurs, or people put in positions that effectively act that way, is one of the best places, and sometimes only places, to put kind of this, you know, class of worker that you would call a generalist.
Yes.
Generalists are really hard to put in any one position, but if you put them in a position that maybe, you know, is more mile wide, you know, half mile deep, as opposed to, you know, 10 feet wide and
sure,
40 miles deep, they tend to do well, and it provides that organization with access to a generalist, which are sometimes the people who come up with the crazy moonshot idea that ends up being, to your point, BBVA starts offering financial services on Amazon.
Yeah, and it's funny because growing up in my career at IBM, they actually treasured generalists. And that's why I think I'm so ambidextrous, because I can kind of sit in any role and come up with these harebrained ideas. Actually, I came up with one the other day, and someone said, what the? On HELOCs is, hey, guys, I think augmented reality can be used to sell HELOCs. And they were like, really, Martha? Explain. And once I explained it, they were like, okay, let's put that away right here in this box, because that might be an initiative that we look at, because then that will lap all of our competition, because no one's thinking about that. But I think that generalists, because you have a lot of interest, you have depth and you have breadth and you have range. And sometimes you need that. And in entrepreneur within companies, because they can rotate different business units, they naturally are able to take some in that information and take in that information and then translate it or output it into something fantastic.
So I think intuitively people understand that the banking industry, both, you know, kind of commercial and otherwise, is a really competitive industry. And with interest rates being low and everything else, there's a tremendous amount of pressure for really delivering, you know, great customer experience, driving deposits, doing all the things that banks have to do as a business model.
Yep.
So clearly that's an industry that needs to be focused on these kinds of, you know, innovative approaches. What other industries do you think right now are either behind the curve or in desperate need of focusing on some of that innovation to stay relevant or to stay competitive within their respective markets?
I'd say the rental car industry is ripe for disruption. Because I hate it. I have to travel a lot.
You are singing my song.
And there are some times when, you know, you're the Hertz Club member and you have the key and you can go in. But then if whoever booked my travel and I'm with Thrifty or whatever, I have to stand in the line. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Can't you integrate into the DMV or into insurance and already have all of my information? You already have my credit card, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to name Enterprise my name here because they're so bad at this,
yes,
right?
They are.
So I've joined every club. I'm a corporate member. I've got all this stuff. Every single time I rent a car, it's like the first time I've ever rented a car anywhere on earth, regardless of the fact that it's the third time I've seen them this month.
Yes, absolutely. It drives me nuts. So they are absolutely ripe for innovation. And I also think that the retail industry from a children perspective is ripe for disruption. Just from toys or shopping or clothing, I think if they make it immersive and more playful, then you can drive more people to the stores. Because, I mean, I have sons and they hate it. Unless we're going to shop for like a baseball bat or something.
Yeah, if it's sporting goods, yeah.
And even if it's that, they're just like, okay, let's just pick this Rawlings or this Cat 5 or whatever it is and let's go. But Dick's did something interesting. Actually, I just thought of this, is they put a batting cage in there. So you can then go in and hit. And I think if you adopt that more immersive and experiential shopping process, you can grow. And I think that they're ripe for disruption across the board from a retail perspective.
So two thoughts on that. It's a really good example, talking about the Dick's with the batting cage, because, you know, I am a terrible golfer and I've started taking lessons because I'm tired of being this bad.
Okay.
I want to just be like mediocrely bad.
Good. I found someone who might beat me.
Yeah.
Who might be worse than me.
Yes. No, I'll make you feel better about your golf game. We'll go play. The technology that they have now put into these indoor practice places is unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, it makes technology of a Tesla almost look, you know, it's crazy
it
what
is.
They can do in there. And I won't get into the whole thing because I don't think anybody cares about this if you're not a golfer. But point is, to your point, you can now go in and try a golf club. You can go in and have a lesson and it's not outside.
Yep.
You can, I mean, everything about that has gotten so much better. And it was a trickle down effect from, you know, the pros wanted it. And then they realized, well, we should be making this available to everybody else. The other industry that I thought of that is crazy to me is like all of these technology managed service providers. You still have to pick up a phone and call somebody when your technology goes down.
Yeah. That's true.
How is that still a thing in this day and age that they don't have better? Like, how is it that you don't know that my network is down?
Correct.
Why do I have to call you?
Right. You should have a dashboard where you're tracking that and you can pinpoint, hey, you're down and fix it.
It's amazing to me.
That absolutely is. I didn't think of that. That's a great point and a great observation.
So the larger point is, from golf to sporting goods to children's clothes to managed service providers to rental cars, there's just so much opportunity out there for people to really be thinking about all of this.
Absolutely.
All right. So we talked about, you know, industries that are ripe for it. What other companies do you see that are doing a really good job with it? I mean, I think you would say BBVA is doing a very good job with it. But outside of BBVA, what companies do you look at that you go, that's pretty admirable how they're doing this?
I'd say Nike. Nike's always been that. They have that innovation lab. So they're always experimenting, and they are also doing very well by allowing you to just design your own sneaker. Again, personalization is big. The other one is Alassian. They have this this new thing, I forget, I think it's called Ship It Days, based on the FedEx being able to ship within 24 hours, where 3 or 4 days out of the year, they tell all their employees, hey, just work on something outside of your day job. Whether it's, again, that defect you want to fix or you want to create a new product or feature, you have 24 hours to build it and then present it. And I think that's how they keep their culture fresh, and that's how they stay innovative, and that's a great model for anyone to use.
Somebody told me, and I had no idea, and maybe you're familiar with this, but Chick-fil-A is one of the most innovative companies out there. They were talking to me about literally what made me think of it is you talked about the labs and the innovation labs. They have like 5 or 6 development labs. That's everything from food preparation to training to, you know, how to build a better service counter to how to build a more efficient drive through. And I think anybody's ever been to a Chick-fil-A, you see things happening in a Chick-fil-A that you don't see in other places.
Absolutely.
It's amazing to me.
Chick-fil-A is doing a lot. They were doing a lot with data analytics because I was working with a team here that worked with Chick-fil-A. They are like data nuts. And, you know, they're programming the fry bot and they want to get it right. It, you know, make sure, when do we drop it? You know, all of it, it's timed. They have timed going through the drive-through. So much. And they are absolutely, I think, one of the companies that just get it. And it's funny because they're in the food industry. And so you think food industry can't be innovative, but here Chick-fil-A is being innovative.
By accident, I ended up in one of the, you know, the projects that came out of that lab, which is and I don't remember which road it's on, but it's coming out of Atlanta, coming back to Birmingham. I pulled over there to get some breakfast on my way out of town early one morning to come back to Birmingham. And I walked up. I don't like doing the drive through. I think it takes too long. I walk in, get out faster, you know, whatever. So I walk up and I realize, like, there is no dining room. There are counters like you would have at like at a stadium, right? Where you go up and you can order at a window, but there is no inside of this place. But instead, what it has is it has basically almost like it's not a three lane, it's a two lane drive through. But it is, everything about that place is about quick serve and how fast I can serve it. So you can still go to the window and get served, which I did very fast, very pleasantly, everything you would expect from, but there was no dining room.
Right.
It was just a drive-through. And I started really paying attention, and the way they did it was no traffic out on the road.
Absolutely.
Right. Super efficient coming in there. Everything about that place was servicing that drive-through. Now, if you wanted to go to the counter, you could do that, but they were making no illusions about this being a dining room. And I just thought it was really interesting. I watched it, and normally I get out, I go in, I get my food, I come out, and I kind of chuckle to myself because the person I would have been behind hasn't even ordered yet, right? I always count the cars because
I do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm competitive, I guess. But I do the same thing. I came out, and I absolutely was not faster than the car that I would have been behind. So yeah, it you know, just testament to that. So some of this stuff just shows up in places you wouldn't expect.
Absolutely.
So. What will happen next? Like, what is for corporate innovation going into 2020, 2021, and in the future, what do you think that's going to look like? Is it going to look differently? Is it going to be a progression of the same things? What do you think happens there?
I think it's going to look a little differently. I think corporations are starting to catch on that they need to speed up, although I think they need to slow down a little bit, but that's a whole different thing. But they're looking to speed up, and the only way that they can speed up is through partnerships. Just locally, look at APCO and how they partnered with Techstars. I think you're going to see a lot more organizations or large organizations partner with incubators, and they're going to be searching for products or services out of those incubators that they can either acquire or purchase or use as an external studio for some of their ideas and some of their problem solving, because it's just easier to outsource it. So I think that they're going to outsource and partner a lot more in the coming years, because that's the only way to keep up. Because there's no way to continue business as usual and service your current customer while going at the speed of what's happening outside of the industry. It's no way to keep up with that. So the only way to say, okay, I can even compete here is through partnering with incubators. I think that's what we're going to start seeing.
Martha Underwood, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure, Matt. I'll come back anytime.
Thank you. We'll have you.